it's uncharted territory for me. The one time I did get traded mid-season, you know, the Cowboys, they had a bye week that same week, so I kind of had a lot of time to prepare, to know the system and things of that nature. So this is definitely new for me. At the end of the day, it's just football, you know. I think I'm a pretty cerebral guy, at least cerebral enough to learn the playbook as fast as I can. If I can go out there and get lined up and just run routes, catch the ball, get open, you know, compete in the run game.
New Buffalo Bills wide receiver Amari Cooper.
As
my buddy Jim, he told me this one during the week, and he's like, I need you to say this on air, and this is my promise to a friend.
Okay.
So this is for my buddy Jim. I tweeted it with the show promo that Brandon Beam is the Cooper Scooper.
The Cooper Scooper.
Oh yes, and that's how we're bringing Carl Jones in, is that Brandon Bean is the Cooper Scooper. How do you rate that joke there, Carl?
Man, I don't know about that one. You my dog and all, but I don't know.
It wasn't my joke, it was my buddy's. I was like, fine, I'll do it for you. So, sorry, Jim, you're getting dragged now.
I love it, though. Next time.
Sure. Yeah, we got to workshop these things. That's how it is. First of all, now, Carl, any other radio show give you an introduction as chaotic as that? I don't think that's going to happen. But Carl Jones, WIVB, joining us here on the West Hera Hotline. It's been a month and change since we talked. It's good to have you back.
I'm glad to be back, man. Glad to chat it up with you guys. And what a better week to chat it up.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, well, what's happened here? Wait, I just got a flag, Carl.
The zebras are running through the halls as we speak here.
They're inside our walls now. So, Carl, of course, the flag-filled Monday night game, they win it. It's 4-2 now for the Bills. They got themselves in clear control now of the AFC East. And what do they do seeing the Jets trade for Davante Adams? Oh, ho-hum, we'll take some of that attention away. We bring Amari Cooper in from Cleveland to the Buffalo Bills here. This is a dynamic addition in the sense that Amari Cooper is very good against man coverage. He's a guy that is very talented. He still is one of the better athletes that not a lot of people seem to talk about, and is one of the most underrated wide receivers in the National Football League. What are your thoughts here on the Bills adding Cooper and being able to help the wide receiver room that had been clearly struggling over the last 3 weeks?
I love it, especially for the prices they got him. I mean, the Browns kind of did them a favor with restructuring his contract before the season began. I know they were in talks of moving him for the Brandon Ayuk thing, and things happened, but that just happens to be a blessing for the Bills in the sky to a certain extent. But I love the skill set fit for where the Bills are right now. I said this in the offseason, and it felt like this through the first 6 weeks of the year, where the Bills' offense feels like they're in New York City rush hour traffic where, like, yeah, they can plow through you if they want to, but they can't really go 60 miles per hour and, like, go stretch the field vertically and have explosive plays. And that was due in large part because of the talent on the outside. And I think Amari Cooper, I know he's not like a blazer, Tyreek Hill or anything like that, but he's really crafty down the field. He's a vet. He's savvy, and he knows how to push guys off and work sidelines. And I think he'll be a great addition in terms of helping the Bills become more explosive because I'm not saying that 12-play drives aren't great, but to do it consistently week in and week out against some of the better defenses in the NFL is a tall task to ask for.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that addition spoke volumes at the same week as the, like we mentioned, the Davante Adams trade, the same day, that is. I guess looking at the Titans defense, right? Let's just dive right into it. The Titans defense is ranked as one of the best pass defenses in the NFL. That might be a little inflated based on the quarterback talent they have played. Where do you see, I guess, does Amari Cooper and the limited snaps he is going to play help kind of open some guys up? Or where do you see the Bills and Josh Allen able to fit in that no matter what?
I do think it's inflated because of quarterback play. I do know they have a pretty nasty front led by Jeffrey Simmons. Harold Landry can come off the edge as well. They got their front is what fuels their defense. Obviously, they got Legarius Sneed over there now. He's not quite having the same success he had in Kansas City, but he's still a solid player. So those type of players, especially on the back end, where they play a lot of press coverage, they get in your face. Cooper is the one guy who excels in that regard. So if without him this week, I do think it'll be a little bit more of a challenge to go up against that defense. But with someone like that, if he plays 40 to 50% of the snaps, you know he'll have packages. You know he'll have stuff in the red zone designed strictly for him. It'll help out so, so much against a Titan defense that wants to get in your face and be physical.
Part of one of the ways, though, to help out against the physical defense is, well, the proficiency in the run game that the Bills have been able to hit you right in the face first. That offensive line, it doesn't seem to matter at this point who's behind Josh Allen in the backfield. James Cook has had himself a nice season. Ray Davis had himself a beautiful game against the Jets. That offensive line, Carl, is how things have been going when it comes to paving the way and helping maintain some balance with the Bills' offense.
Y'all showing the big fella some love. Let's go. No, you're 100% right, though. And they've kind of been molded in Sean McDermott's image of like wanting to be a physical team. Like as long as he's been in Orchard Park, he's wanted a team that can establish the line of scrimmage on both sides. And I think you see all the resources they poured on the defensive line over the years, and they may not have done it with high draft picks on offense, but you can see that they've continued to try to revamp that unit to be some guys who can control the game. And I know they had some hiccups in Baltimore as well as in Houston, but in their wins, a lot of that was because of the fact that they can move a man from point A to point B and backs weren't getting contact until 5-6 yards down the field.
Carl Jones joining us here on the West Hurrah Hotline. Of course, when it all comes down to it, though, Josh Allen, for the Bills to have continued success, Josh Allen needs to be Josh Allen. And it feels like a little bit is personnel. Part of it might be that hand injury that he's had to deal with since the first game of the year. But it's a very pedestrian 193 passing yards a game right now for the Bills quarterback. How much do you think Amari Cooper, over the course of the season, will be able to help get those totals back to where we're used to, or at least somewhat what we're used to with number 17?
I think he'll help, especially on those plays where it's got to have it down. It's 3rd and 6. You know, you can have the best play call in the world, but at the end of the day, you need your guy to win. And I don't know throughout the first 6 weeks if he truly felt confident, especially in those Texans and Ravens games. The other three games, I just think the Bills were just that much better than the team across from them that really didn't matter. But against those better teams with formidable defenses, it'll help to have a guy that you say, hey, man, I trust you. You're going to win. I don't care if that's Marlon Humphrey on the other side. I don't care if that's Derek Stingley Jr. You're going to win. So especially on those third downs, I know the Bills have struggled in third and longs. No one likes to be in third and longs. But Josh Allen is actually one of the better quarterbacks of that in the NFL. But this year it hasn't been that case. I think because he hasn't really had an outlet or a guy, he's like, you know what, we're going here, F the playbook. So I think that's a guy who will help out at least in that regard.
Yeah, I think also the last couple, those two games that you mentioned, Baltimore and Houston, Khalil Shakir dealt with that injury and even kept him out of Houston entirely. With his proficiency of moving the chains this year, it was definitely tougher to get things going there. Moving to the other side of the ball, Carl, this defense is finally getting healthy. Taron Johnson comes back last week, seals the game with the interception. Taylor Rapp plays probably his best game as a Bill coming off of the concussion. And now you're starting to see, and Ed Oliver looks like he's ready to go now this week as well. It looks like the Bills' defense is coming back healthy and looking to come back to form.
Yeah, and they're a unit that I had some question marks coming into the season. I still have some. But I think that combined with Sean McDermott and Bobby Babbage calling plays and designing stuff, and then some players who have taken a leap. I think Terrell Bernard outside of Western New York was underrated by some, and I think he's going to continue to make plays this year, so he's on everyone's radar and you can't miss him. Christian Benford, he's taken a step. I know that the Bills wish that flash from week one from Gregory Rousseau will come back at some point and be more consistent, but they have some dudes who are dudes. And I think that's one thing that you see from all the elite defenses in the NFL. Regardless of the play call, regardless of who's across from you, do you have a guy who can change the game? And I think that the Bills are hoping that you can see continued growth from a Terrell Bernard, from a Christian Benford, to where you're in the postseason, hey, man, you're going up against a Jamar Chase or a Mark Andrews or whoever the case may be. Can you just go make a play? I can't scheme you up here. Can you just go out there and do something spectacular? And I think so far you've seen some players on the Bills' defense. We already know Taron Johnson can do that, Matt Milano as well. Do they have a couple more up their sleeve that can be those guys come postseason time?
So staying on the topic of defense here, the Bills' defense, like we said, is getting healthier, but there still are some players out like Matt Milano. Von Miller is out for a couple more games. Players, though, the next man up mentality has been strong throughout the season. Dorian Williams, though, specifically, yeah, he's had a couple spots where he's gotten burned, per se, right? But overall, he's been very serviceable in place of Matt Milano. What are your thoughts on him?
I'm loving what I'm seeing. We've all played sports, and you heard the analogy where, like, hey, man, I'd much rather have a player I tell to dial it back as opposed to turn it on. And Dorian Williams personifies that. There will be some plays where I don't even know if he's going to the right gap, but he's hitting somebody. I can work with that, and I know the Bills can work with that. That's why he's out there playing a lot of snaps this year. That Texans game especially, he was knocking back those dudes in a line of scrimmage 2-3 yards and making plays in the backfield, and that's really impressive out of an undersized linebacker. It's really C-ball, hit-ball when the work comes to him, and he's become a lot more disciplined in pass coverage as well. I know that's why he got benched as a rookie in 2023. I'm impressed with what I've seen with him. He's a guy that when and if Matt Milano comes back to form later in the season, I'm sure the Bills are going to figure out ways to keep him on the field, and it's a great problem to have when you got to decide, hey, Matt Milano, Taron Johnson, Dorian, who do we take off the field? The Bills will address that come December and January, but man, it's just fun to watch him play, especially when he's just trying to hit anything in sight.
Carl, of course, I wouldn't have you on here if we're not going to talk secondary and D-backs here, man. So I got to do my duty to get the word out about how this secondary has been playing. Christian Benford's starting to get a little bit of those roses now throughout the season from outside sources or outside media of, hey, this guy is actually continuing to almost dominate, it seems. Him and Rasul Douglas remain one of the best secondary tandems in the league when at corner. There are some hiccups still at safety with Damar Hamlin, Taylor Rapp, Cole Bishop, Bishop in particular getting burned in Houston. But what is your take so far about how that secondary has been able to continue to dictate play even when they still give up yards? Aaron Rodgers almost gets to 300 this past Monday, but it almost still feels like the secondary is in control.
Yeah, they're like a boa constrictor on defense, especially that secondary where you can get a couple slants here, a dig route there, might give up a flag route, but it's going to be constricting, and we're going to force you to be right every single play. And that's kind of why they feast on below-average quarterbacks, because below-average quarterbacks aren't going to be right every single snap. Now, on Monday night, Aaron Rodgers has seen every single defense in the world, so he's going to be a player who's going to be right more often than not. But even he was wrong a few times, as you saw on that final play of the game for the Jets offense. That's what's so cool about how they play defense in the secondary. They're always on the same page. They communicate, albeit the Texans' long touchdown to Nico Collins was a miscommunication, but they don't really have those hiccups too often. And it's not just like they know what they're doing. They can play. We've seen Rasul Douglas take the ball away. Christian Benford, so physical out there. I'm so jealous. I wish I had his tenacity at cornerback because I really wasn't trying to hit and tackle out there. Christian Benford think he a linebacker or something. I don't know. The dude can hit. And then Taylor Rapp, let me tell you, I don't know what era he thought he was in, but I swear he thought he was watching some Ronnie Lott. You know what? Taylor Rapp had to watch Ronnie Lott in pregame because he was out there smacking dudes. I'm like, yo, came back from concussion, and I thought he was Ronnie Lott again. So they're playing well, and I know that a lot of people want to credit that to the scheme, but players play, and players make plays. And so far this year, the secondary has done that.
So, Carl, this has been something that that we've seen now a little too frequently with this team. It's that Hail Mary problem, and it came back. Like, yeah, Aaron Rodgers is that dude. He's been able to do that all throughout his career. But a lot of fans got a lot of past trauma, so to say, seeing the Bills give one up like that. Have you ever had that kind of experience of dealing with a Hail Mary, and why are the Bills so, like, can we try to at least
why are they trying to help catch the ball?
Demystify what the hell they're doing when it comes to that play.
Man, truthfully, what happened Monday night, if I had to guess, they didn't anticipate the Hail Mary, and that's why the roles look kind of weird. Like, Taron Johnson, actually, and I know it sounds crazy, he did the right thing. And the person in the front is supposed to box out. The issue was there was no one to box out. And then Taylor Rapp and Damar Hamlin were trying to catch the ball for some odd reason instead of bat it down. And then there are guys in the back, like I believe Christian Benford and Rasul Douglas were. So they were in the right spots. They just clearly didn't execute the right way. I mean, you practice Hail Mary situations every single walkthrough practice on Friday. So it's not like they don't go through it. I know that they do it. Some guys just freeze up in the moment. I don't know. I'm kind of baffled that it continues to happen to the Bills, too.
Yeah, man, I had to pick your brain on that one because it's something that it's just like, why? How? Why? Like, that's the question that keeps coming up. Why? Like, and we're never going to get a clear answer on it because, like you said, it's a mix of execution and, like, you know, maybe you're thinking too much about something in the moment. But also at the same time, I don't know if there's something with the calls or the coaching that why do the Bills keep trying to catch the ball in those situations? Are they not getting the teaching that's supposed to be going on there? I have too many questions about a scenario that we see once every some odd years, but it's the fact that we're still seeing it every couple years that it came into my head, and I'm just like, I gotta ask somebody. So I had to go to you on that one as our secondary ace, so to say.
Yeah, no, I understand how it's frustrating because I know it is something that you practice 2 minutes every single Friday. You practice all special situations. I know Hail Mary's in there, and if it isn't, and if it wasn't before, they do it twice every Friday now.
So taking a look, just to wrap up here, taking a look at the schedule from here on out for the Bills, they kind of have to go on a run here before they face Kansas City. How easily do you see that being done if they keep playing the way they do and Josh Allen continues to elevate as Amari Cooper also gets involved more with the offense? Lots of pieces that are possibly coming back with Von Miller too. So what do you see the Bills doing on their run to the head-to-head with Kansas City here?
Yeah, I see some wins. I mean, you got four games in between that Kansas City game, November 17th. I think they should be able to take care of business against the Titans. It's a home game, so I know the Bills are ecstatic that they can sleep in their own beds the day before the game. I think the Seahawks game is tricky, flying cross-country. I like Geno Smith a lot. They have some weapons on the outside. I like what Mike McDonald, their new head coach, does on defense. But I think the Bills are better on paper, but as we all know, those time zone games are tricky. Tua should be back for that Dolphins game. I don't know if they get a new spark because he's back. And then the Colts, who knows? Honestly, I think the Colts are the one team that no one knows anything about. Like, Anthony Richardson has played, like, 12 games. Actually, that's too many. He's played, like, 6 games in his NFL career. Who knows? So I think a 3-1, and I know they're better than probably all the teams in the schedule, but it's the NFL. You're going to drop a couple games that you probably shouldn't. I think they should be in good shape before they got to play Kansas City on the 17th.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I do think that, like you said, Carl, they should be able to clean up a business on paper. There's a lot of winnable situations in those 4 weeks there. But it's going to be an interesting one, to say the least, especially with Amari Cooper getting into this role and trying to get a little bit more acclimated. Carl, what do you got coming up here with the Bills, with your coverage? And if people aren't following you, first of all, they're doing it wrong. And second of all, let them know where to find you, where to find your work, and how to see what you've got going on.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter, X. I'm still going to call it Twitter. I'm sorry, Elon Musk.
Yep, I'm with you all the way, man.
Follow me on that, Jones11_. Obviously, I'm a reporter on the team, so I give all the information for, like, the Daily Beat reporter stuff. And then also, I kind of look at things from a defensive back perspective. So I'm like, hey, I can tell you what X, Y, and Z were thinking on this given play. If you're looking for what a tackle is supposed to do on a stunt blitz, sorry to break it to you, buddy. I have no idea what Deion Dawkins is supposed to do. But if you want to know what Christian Benford or Rasul is doing, I got you. And then tomorrow, actually, on our Buffalo kickoff live coverage before the game, I sat down with Ray Davis for our 5-question segment. Funny, funny dude. He is hilarious, great personality. You guys should check that out tomorrow at 11 a.m.
There we go. Carl, I always appreciate you. Thank you for jumping on again, and I'll tell my buddy we got to start workshopping more of those nicknames.
Yeah, for sure. No, Cooper's Pooper, Scooper, whatever. Next time.
Yeah, we'll get it next time. Carl, thank you, man. Enjoy your weekend, and looking forward to seeing what you got there at 11 there with Buffalo Kickoff Live.
Thank you. You guys have a good one.
You too, thanks.
You too, Carl. Appreciate you. That's Carl Jones on the Westura Hotline, WIVB, here in Buffalo. I love talking to Carl, man. He's always got that insight.
Mm-hmm.
And
as a former player, it's always interesting because he has a different scope that
I sure as hell don't.
Yeah, right.
You know? So, you know, being able to pick his brain, it's like it was the Hail Mary thing. Like, So you and I will always think of questions mm-hmm. about these sorts of things. And you pointed at the Tyler Bass point, and I was like, eh, we already did that.
Yeah.
So then I was like, wait, there's something else that upset me about that game.
And I totally forgot about it.
And we hadn't brought it up yet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. They allowed another dang Hail Mary.
Yeah. It's because it was all of a sudden, like, you know, they thought they were
going to... They were in control.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were looking at double dip activated.
Yes, yeah.
You're up by 10. And the next thing you know...
Aaron Rodgers does Aaron Rodgers.
58 yards later, you're
what
the hell?
You knew it was going to happen, though, because they showed the three successful ones before that. And mm-hmm. I'm like, yep, they did it.
You know what?
This is it. This is what happens.
The one thing I really think and I theorize that they should have done is, and I'm kind of crazy for it, blitz them.
Send an all-out blitz.
Send a blitz. You want to know why? The Jets have been terrible against it.
Yeah.
And even in that game, Buffalo did it a couple times, and he got crushed by A.J. Epinesa.
A.J. Epinesa.
A legal sack, by the way. And like he came clean off the edge. If you blitzed him there, he doesn't have time to throw the Hail Mary.
He had so much time to wait.
And you might be... But also, Sean McDermott prepared for the sideline. Prepare for the sideline because they didn't have timeouts. So guess what?
You stop them. They're not getting into field goal formation.
They're not getting into field goal formation in due time. And... Like, yeah, you might risk like getting the 15-yard penalty and setting them up for like roughing the pass or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I would take that risk on that sort of situation, especially with the team struggling against blitz.
Yes.
Hindsight's 20/20, though.
Mm-hmm.
I still think you should have blitzed them more than you did in that game because the Jets were blitzed more than 50% of the time in the last two games against Minnesota and against Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And those two teams dominated them.
Yeah.
Where this was a game.
It was a game because of that Hail Mary.
It was a game because of that Hail Mary. And if you blitz in that situation, you might have been able to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's hindsight kind of thing.
It's also a divisional game, and those always tend to be closer than your average matchups.
It's still a fascinating point to bring up that maybe you could have done that and made it work. But all we have to do is react to the fact that what they did didn't work. And you go, why us? Why again? Why?
They mentioned the Hail Mary, all of that on the broadcast, too. Mm-hmm. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I was like, ah! Why?
And then then people forget the same season, they let the Chargers do it, and then they famously derp it by trying to run the ball a couple times with no timeouts.
Mm-hmm. I forgot the Chargers did it until when it happened. I went back and looked, and everyone on Twitter was like, oh, look, it's just like the Chargers, just like the
and
Cardinals.
And I got so terrified when the Colts line up to do it in the wild card game.
Oh, my God.
Because I'm like, oh, no.
That game was close.
Yeah. And I'm like, this team stinks against the Hail Mary. Rivers didn't have the arm strength. It didn't get to the end zone. But the minute they're lining up for it, I'm like, oh, no, mm-hmm. I'm terrified because mm-hmm. they are 0-2 this year. And it's like.
Yeah. And, you never knew what Phillip Rivers was capable of.
Exactly.
I mean, he could have pulled some crazy thing out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
It was just the minute they lined up for that, I was like, oh no, I'm scared now. Like that whole game, I'm like, cool as a cucumber. I'm like, okay, yeah, Indy's making it a game, but the Bills got this. They got this. They got this.
There's no way they don't. And then Hail Mary.
And then they're lining for Hail Mary. I'm like, they might not got this. So it's weird. The sports are weird, man. Why do we do it? Well,
you even heard Carl, right? These games, the Bills are better on paper than every single one of these teams leading up to Kansas City. But it's the NFL, so you're going to drop one that you shouldn't.
And sometimes the coaching decisions haven't been the best when you look at it in hindsight. And that's typically why there's some complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay to say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to chime in here. Bills getting Amari Cooper. What do you think is going to go on there? They've got the Titans tomorrow. They should beat the hell out of them.
They should. With no field goals or kicks.
I don't know.
No Hail Marys either.
Yeah, no Hail Marys either. Sabres play tonight against Chicago. Are you frustrated like I was in the first hour? Anything is on the table. Everything's on the table. If you want to jump in, Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR.
You know, in fairness to Amari, I would say he's only been here on a short week. That is, 3 days now? This will be his third practice. We did a walkthrough on Wednesday due to the Monday night game there. So we'll see where it goes. And at the end of the day, we're happy to have him, and we look forward to good things going forward.
Head coach Sean McDermott, Amari Cooper, the new Bill, as they take on the Tennessee Titans. Good old 1 o'clock kickoff tomorrow here.
Excited for that.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good time. I think that it also allows for the fan base to relax a little bit now with how the wide receivers have been and how heated of a topic that kind of became throughout the offseason as well. It allows for everyone to, you know, just take a step back and just, all right, let's go. See what we got. Let's see what we got with Amari Cooper. And we can get connected with our fans about this sort of topic because it's brought to you by Northtown Kia. West New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We head out to Scott in Williamsville. Scott, welcome to Sports Talk Saturday. How you doing?
How you doing, guys? Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just kind of want to get your thoughts because step back a little. You know, I think this whole thing, for me anyway, and, well, it is a fact, you know, it all started with the decision of 12 personnel. I mean, before that happened, the Bills are sitting at 13-3 and had a phenomenal season, obviously affected by the DeMar Hamlin situation. And then all of a sudden, it's like, let's scrap that. Let's use a first and I think a fourth to get Kincaid, a double tight end. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got Diggs becoming disgruntled after he started the season really strong, and the Bills are 6-6, which was shocking. And then, you know, we move Diggs, and we sit there, and Brandon Bean trades him and says, wait till we see our roster, and next thing you know, we lose seven starters, captains, and Pro Bowlers, which is unheard of. I've never heard of a team losing that much. And then you bring in Claypool, ridiculous. Scantling, ridiculous. You know, people said, oh, Curtis Samuel's never had a quarterback like Josh. I mean, six games in, what does he have, 100 yards? I mean, it's just, I think it's been a domino effect. And, you know, Amari Cooper himself said, you know, I really wasn't trying that much at the beginning of the season because he was disgruntled. He's got 9 drops that leads the league. I mean, I just don't understand. And, I still get upset about the 12 personnel. And you, Josh Allen, 130 yards, 139 yards, 180 yards. I mean, he's going to become frustrated, I think. So I'll just listen to see what you think of all that.
Scott, I appreciate the call, and honestly, I'm gonna try to talk you back a little bit here. And I think part of it has to do with Cooper. Having a guy like Deshaun Watson, who has now proven to be not just subpar, but actually the worst quarterback in football, it seems, that leaves a lot to be discouraged about. So I wouldn't worry about Cooper. The drops, I mean, I watched some of that, and some of them does look like it's on the quarterback too, like not great throws. A wide receiver will always say, if it hits my hands, I got to catch it. But there are better situations that Watson could have gotten the football to him with. There are plays where he straight up dropped a ball and, you know, and you biffed it. But that's, it happens. Like, players may be world-class athletes, but, they're also still human. Humans do make mistakes.
Yeah.
Happens. The 12 personnel thing, though, is very interesting because it's something that seemed like Ken Dorsey wanted to do, and it wanted to be like he wanted that identity to kind of be there for. And then, like, yeah, it seems like they're trying to almost push a little bit too much of balance when you look at 2020, 2021, and 2022, where they're just boat racing the rest of the league. Absolutely finding their way around and doing whatever they want almost offensively on a weekly basis. I do think that has something to do with it. That 12 personnel really trying to shift in this direction and force it.
Well, also you've paid Dawson Knox and you have Dalton Kincaid. I feel like you kind of have to try. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, but you also can eat contracts through playing time as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Knox is a capable blocker. He's a very good tight end too, I think. And it would allow for a little bit more of the, all right, just go do what you want to do. But then the wide receivers, because of the fact that they were so invested in this 12 personnel, they took a direction that it seems like it kind of caught up to them. And what I see out of the Amari Cooper trade is admitting a mistake. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, that
you look at the build of the roster and how the offseason went, as Scott put it. And I think the Amari Cooper trade is admitting a mistake. You didn't do enough at the position. Hey, guess what?
That guy's available on a really cheap cap hit. Cleveland's terrible. We'll offer up a third rounder. That seems like a fair little trade. And now you can correct a mistake.
See how that works, Kevin Adams?
You corrected the mistake of relative inaction at the position, and hopefully now you can try to bear the fruits of that correction.
Yeah. I just, my whole thing too, just on the point of Allen getting frustrated with yardage count, I don't think that's something, I think that's more of a disgruntled fantasy manager's opinion. You know what I'm saying? I don't think
the players can be mad. I think
that shows the effectivity of this run game and how Joe Brady has revolutionized it more than anything. I think that's what that shows. I don't think Allen's disgruntled with why he's only throwing for 180 yards a game or 130 yards a game.
And if he does get disgruntled about that and they're winning, and it's not like he's struggling.
Boo-hoo.
I definitely want that concern flushed down the toilet.
Yeah. Because like,
I don't think the player is getting mad at that. And if he is, I don't want him.
Yeah. That's called a locker room toxicity right there.
Yeah. That would be a problem.
Yeah.
So... And I don't want a problem.
I don't think Allen is that player either. So I think, you know, he even goes up to the receivers. He's like, today might not be your day, blah, blah, blah. Like, he said that. Like, he very much wants the team to win, and however that happens, it happens. Yeah. I think that's what he's at.
Yeah.
I don't think he's upset.
He's passionate about trying to get wins for this team as well. He oftentimes will state it in interviews very candidly, everything like that. So for me, again, Cooper looks like it's a correction to the inaction.
It does.
Of the offseason. And that's huge because very rarely do you get general managers on a football team or any major pro sports team be willing to make that correction. And it's not like he admitted it.
No.
The action admits it.
They took an interior look and they said, okay, this is what we didn't do. And they remedied it in the best way they could in the middle of the season.
Exactly.
And who knows? He said the trades aren't. It's not 100% done yet. The deadline still is not hit. Anything else can happen.
And that's a general manager recognizing, okay, the rest of the conference might be weaker than it could be.
Yes.
And the division is ours, which means that we are a lock for a home game and lock for the playoffs if it looks like we're in control again. So let's go and improve things. Then again, it's the action that states it to me.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's necessarily what Brandon Bean's thinking, but how I'm going to interpret it here is, it is a correction on the inaction from the offseason because that's ultimately what the result of it is. They did not do enough. And now he sees that on the field and goes, how can I help this group like this? I can help this group by doing this. I can help this group by making a correction.
Adding an X receiver.
And adding an X receiver.
Mm-hmm.
An outside threat that can really help this group beat man coverage. What it looks like, I was confident in this group, but it looks like they're not able to do that.
Yeah.
So let's get a guy who can. And he's very affordable. He fits in our cap. And I only have to give up a what?
A third and a sixth?
Exactly. A third and a seventh.
Third and a seventh, you get a sixth.
Yeah, you get the pick swap of a 6-7.
Yeah. How can you... I saw Pat McAfee break the news, right? He's like, this is like robbery. You're getting a pick swap in the sixth and seventh. You're going up a pick, and you're getting a number one receiver. Like, that's...
And usually, they throw those sixes in there to, like, move up.
Yeah.
In day three. Or
right.
Day two, sorry. And guess what? You just lost a third-round pick. Guess what that sixth rounder is probably getting bundled up to do?
Exactly. And you have back-to-back seconds, don't you? Not back-to-back.
You have two, though.
Two second-round picks. Yeah.
They have draft board maneuverability still, even losing a third.
Very much so.
They can get back into the third round if they want to, and typically they want to.
Yeah, because you saw this season. That's why they traded out of the first round.
Dwayne Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he hasn't had an impact already.
Right. He filled in for Ed Oliver and did a pretty solid job.
Filled in well.
Mm-hmm.
We can shift topics here as we get to Nick in Buffalo. Nick, welcome to Sports Talk Saturday.
Hi, guys. I wanted to talk about the Sabres and their slow start again for the third year in a row.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I called in last year. It was about a year and a half ago, and I questioned the players' dedication to the game. And I'm talking the top players who just got paid a lot of money at a young age after essentially doing nothing in the league. Now, talking about Cousins, Samuelson, not Quinn yet and Paterka because they weren't paid. But these guys get done with the game. Dahlin says they were outworked. The youngest team in the NHL. Youngest team in the NHL. Their first back-to-back. They get up to the press conference. They look absolutely shot. Like it's game 80 of 82. I am seriously starting to question what they do in the offseason. Is there a development plan for them? Do they have coaches that follow up with them in the offseason? I look at their height and weight on the roster. There's 0% chance that Dylan Cousins and Quinn weigh over 200 pounds. 0% chance. So what I think is Kevin Adams gave these kids way too much money way too early, and now they feel like they made it and they're set for life and they're not trying hard anymore. And on top of that, Cousins has, like, you watch him, he's got no skill. He looks like a fourth line up and down player. Haven't seen the guy make one move on a defender. Samuelson continuously giving the puck away. Our captain, this Dahlin, Samuelson, Cousins, they're the reason we're losing night in, night out. And then that leads me to my next question. Who picked these captains? Was it Kevin Adams or was it Lindy? Because why would Lindy, a team of players that he's never coached, be picking captains after being with the team for a month?
Nick, it's a lot of questions there, and I do appreciate that. I'm going to try to go through these quick. Cousins, I mean, Brian Koziel said it. It seems like Cousins is trying, and it's just the finishing. The skill has to be there to finish. Mm-hmm. He leads the team in shots with 22. So that's not out of a lack of effort. Yeah, and he's getting high-quality chances, too. So it's not like he's finding himself like shoveling a puck at the blue line in, and it just so happens to hit the goalie. No, he's actually getting into the dirty areas to create these chances. I look back at the Pittsburgh game as he's falling down, trying to shovel one between the legs, and oh, and it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying everything, and it's just, I don't know where the luck is with him in a Sabres uniform. It's just not there. Because he goes to Worlds in Team Canada, and the next thing you know, he's leading those tournaments in goals. It's one of the most, it's one of the strangest things, one of the strangest phenomenons, yeah. I think I should say.
It's literally an anomaly. Like, Samuelson, it just doesn't make sense.
The Samuelson deal probably was an irresponsible contract to give out because Matias Samuelson was a Dahlin merchant for 1 year. He played really well with Rasmus Dahlin because Rasmus Dahlin started to show up and say, hey, I'm that number one overall pick dude who got buried by Ralph Kruger. I'm here to stay. And who was his D partner that year? It was Matias Samuelson. He didn't have to do too much because Rasmus Dahlin was all over the dang ice doing everything and having essentially his wake-up call of being one of the better defenders on this team and then kind of getting toward that upper echelon in the NHL. I don't know how to explain it. And I think part of the problem is there's this lack of chemistry right now with Cousins, Quinn, and either Kulik or Benson. And it's been baffling trying to find out that second line when one of those guys is locked in long term. You've got to figure it out with Dylan Cousins. He has to figure it out. For the team's sake, for his sake, and for our sake. Because I don't want to keep hating on him. A couple years ago, dude's the workhorse from Whitehorse.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it's the effort that's the problem. It's the finish.
Yeah, exactly. There's no other way to put it than that. Because you're right. He is getting in those dirty spots. He's trying to do things. It's just,
he's getting into high-quality chances.
Yeah, and it's just the finishing. Like you said, he can't get the puck in the net for whatever reason.
You got to close.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And I mean, we can go on all day, but unfortunately, I don't have all day.
Yeah.
I have 11 minutes and two breaks to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, I appreciate the call, though, and I get the frustration because
we're all frustrated.
It's 14 years of it, and I know that this group has not been there for all of it, but like some of these players have been there now for a long stretch of it, and you got to do something. All right, let's get in, let's get back out, and close out the day coming up next here on WGR. Hey, we got to end the show, but Evan over there in the control room, he's got TNT on, it looks like. And they're just straight up doing a Star Wars marathon today.
Yes, we've watched Attack of the Clone. I've seen it through the glass the whole time.
First of all, that's great counter-programming, because, like, you know, you got to combat with college football today. Like,
yes.
And if people don't like that, well, you got to get some ratings somewhere. How do you do that? Oh, let's just throw Star Wars on all day.
Mm-hmm.
For the people that can't afford Disney Plus or just don't want to pay for it, like, hey, you know what? Hey, here's some Star Wars.
There's 9, like, 2.5-hour movies that'll fill a whole day of programming.
That's your counter-programming. Yeah. Right there, because why?
Are you competing with college? Are you trying to run sports programming today? No, you're not. You're dealing with playoff baseball.
Yeah.
You're dealing with college football. So why not? Run it.
Yeah.
Run until there's some hockey tonight. I'd imagine that's probably what they'll end up doing for the rest of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Like TNT probably will have a Saturday night broadcast.
Yeah, I would
of some sort. But the midday, great counter programming right there. I like that. Yellow lightsabers have grown on me.
Not me. P.
I'll bring mine in.
Okay.
Make you learn to change a little bit.
Okay. All right. We'll do that again.
we'll do that again.
Like when I brought mine in.
Yeah. We'll do that again. We'll bring the lightsabers in.
Oh jeez.
Here we go, baby. We'll just have a duel in the hallway. You know, it'll be a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Great time. Thank you to my guests today, Howard Simon in the dang morning.
Yes.
Right away to start the show. I've loved having him here for the last couple of weeks, and anytime I get to see him is always. It makes my day so much better to be able to see him. Thank you to Brian Koziel, who was in on the 11 o'clock hour right after that to talk about the Sabres, and then I got all angry about them. Thank you to Alex Brasky, joined us in the 12 o'clock hour, and then, of course, Carl Jones, who joined us at the start of this hour as we talked plenty of Bills as they take on the Titans tomorrow, 1 o'clock kickoff. I'll be here 7 a.m. and getting ready to go with breakfast with the Bills, and we'll have pregame coverage going all day leading up to that 1 o'clock kickoff right here on the radio home of the Buffalo Bills. And, oh, hey, by the way, Sabres at Blackhawks tonight. Steve Foley Law pregame show, 7 o'clock, right here on the radio home of the Buffalo Sabres as well. WGR Sports Radio 550. Have yourselves a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of your sports teams here with the Sabres and the Bills over the next couple days. And take care of yourself out there, all right?
Go Bills!
Go Bills, go Sabres.